This week, we have our hands up. Don't shoot. Welcome to the Midwest Peace Process.
Ladies and gentlemen,
I have the pleasure to present to you now.
I have the pleasure to present to you
the Midwest Peace Process.
The world is very different now.
The Midwest Peace
To remind
process.
America of the fierce urgency of now. Now.
Welcome to episode 75. Today is September 12th, 2014. I'm Jerry.
I'm Jeremy.
And this is Rob.
Our break music this time is provided once again by the Polish ambassador.
Yes.
Kick ass.
I'm a fan.
Holy crap, we got a lot to talk about this time. The day after our last episode, Michael Brown was killed and Ferguson, Missouri blew up. President Obama is bringing us back to Iraq again. And Fox has a new show called Utopia that is a bona fide train wreck. So we'll talk about that a little bit. And the reading room is out of control this month. We've got about 50 news stories in there and videos. So make sure you check that out. And then real quick, I wanted to mention that a year ago, episode 63, we talked about the September 10th Society. We've been quietly posting things out there for the past year, so go check out facebook.com/September10, and we'd love to have you join the September 10th Society if that's something that appeals to you. This is a group we started for those who would like to see us return to the days before, you know, the TSA molested us in airports and, you know, the days before constant warfare and... You know, the good old days.
Nostalgia setting in for...
I think the constant warfare may have been there, but it was just under the surface. Now it's right in your face.
Right, yeah. Okay, so before we go any further, I want to welcome our special guest. AJ is with us.
Yay!
AJ is one of our listeners, and he left us some pretty interesting comments on episode 74. So we invited him to join us, and he took us up on that, so... Welcome.
Thank you for having me.
We're happy to have you. So we are going to start off talking about Ferguson, even though this story has been all anybody's been talking about for the last month. We have a few things to say, and I'll let Rob lead us off since he's taken some notes for a change.
I kind of have my usual kind of potpourri of ideas, so just let the aroma sink in.
Okay.
It'll smell like something.
Yeah, I've already gotten a whiff.
I think the easiest way to start out with is how shocked I was, or maybe not shocked, by how quickly people sided with one side or the other. And so I tried to ask myself, you know, when the Darren Wilson supporters came out, what is it, in South City on Hampton or something, at some kind of cop bar, you know, we support Darren Wilson. You know, were they in any way different, like a high school essay, compare and contrast the Ferguson protesters and the cop supporters? You know, how are they different, or how are they the same? I mean, both.
Nothing burned down in South City. You know?
That's true.
That's one way.
And we'll get to that as well. But, you know, if you have the two groups of people, assuming that they have the same sort of information, they've both drawn radically different conclusions about what has happened, basically hopefully on things based on their own experience. Maybe they know cops that wouldn't think that, well, let me go shoot a guy today. You know, hopefully it would be based on experience. And hopefully the protesters' experience is based on hey, these guys have been harassing us for years now, and this is now blowing up. You know, and versus just the standard race thing. You know, I want to give them a little more credit than just being a race thing. And maybe we could talk about the race of the protesters. I mean, it's portrayed sometimes as kind of a black versus white thing, but there's a good number of white Ferguson residents that are involved in the protests.
Sure.
I mean, so do you is there any difference between the Darren Wilson supporters? You mentioned the looting.
I'm not sure that's a fair statement because. There were.
I'll take the Bernie
these. I'm good for now.
I'll have another.
Me as well. Yep.
No.
I can take that too.
Thank you, Andrea.
Thank you. Yeah, I don't think that's a fair assessment just to say, well, nothing burned down in South City. I mean, I was saying that just because I didn't like the path you were taking, but...
I don't know what path I was taking.
You have an accusatory tone, Rob.
I do? About what?
About the South City folks.
No.
Yeah,
those are South peeps.
Those are my peeps back in South City. That was on the running route.
Anyway, back to what I was saying.
To me, I don't see any difference, actually, between the two.
I don't think there is.
Right.
I don't think the genuine protesters and the genuine supporters, I'm not sure there's much difference.
Right.
But it's hard to tell. In Ferguson, it was hard to draw the line.
Yeah.
Because they were pretty mixed as far as the... Just the derelicts and the
right,
and
right.
You had a healthy number of outsiders that were involved in all the
right.
The conflict,
right. And I think you had like the. It seemed like I don't know 90-95% of people that were protesting. Yeah, they're going to yell at cops. They're going to stand in the street. They're going to do this stuff. But you didn't have. I mean, people weren't out. 90% of the people out there weren't out there going
to
smash
not say
a Quick
90%
Trip
because we don't have this.
Right, we don't really know. It just didn't seem like. I don't know. It didn't seem like everybody was out to go bust up some shops, you know.
However,
but there were opportunistic people, it seemed, that were, said, you know, this is our chance.
But there were protesters who were trying to block streets or block, you know, cause a disruption,
right.
Civil disobedience, which came, I mean, that came up again this week.
Right.
And I didn't get the coverage I saw, I didn't get that same impression from South City. It wasn't
right, and I think I may have had a note on this. It's like you don't. There's a difference there. So we've talked about how they're the same and how both sides are making the same assumptions. But there's kind of a laid back righteousness that comes from the side of power, right? You're the side supporting a cop, and a cop has a cop station and police cars and guns, and that's the side of power. So you're protesting or you're demonstrating in the support of people with power. And what those protests look like tend to be a little bit more, you know, calm and orderly than the protests of the people that, you know, are presumably or, you know, under the thumb of that power.
Okay.
You know, how do you protest when you're under the thumb versus you are the thumb? You know, go on.
Well,
come on.
Okay, so I would say that, you know, the protesters, whether they were legitimate Ferguson residents or not, the protesters were there protesting a number of different things.
Right.
Not just the killing of Michael Brown.
Right.
They're killing, you know, they're protesting they're protesting oppression, basically. At all levels, but I mean the city of Ferguson certainly is guilty of it. And there was a story.
How are they guilty of oppression? I'm just...
So let me find the link. Talk amongst yourselves
in the reading room.
Right.
Yeah,
is this the Washington Post article.
Yes.
Yes. Side note, George Zimmerman was in the news again today, and that guy is just an idiot.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, I didn't hear it.
Road rage incident.
Nice.
You
that's like the
I
second
am?
Time, isn't
threaten
it?
To, threaten to kill the other guy. Yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Interesting.
He's...
Twist mustache.
He's maybe got some anger management issues.
I wouldn't think so. I mean, he might just be defending his community.
Which is now his car. That's sad.
Yeah, I'm having trouble finding this. I don't know why.
So, and I mean, I thought it to myself, like I didn't know what the full story was when this was all coming out. But I sat in my like comfortable life, I thought I get the chance to kind of sit back. Let's let the story play out. I want to see what happens. Well. There's a certain kind of comfort that allows you to be able to say, well, let's see what comes out of this story versus a visceral reaction that is probably due to my experience.
All right, I found it. So I'll put a link in the show notes to this. This was a story in the Washington Post that Radley Balco wrote. And for those who don't know, Radley Balco used to be a fellow at the Cato Institute, and he's also written for Reason magazine. He's a libertarian. He's written a book on the paramilitarization of the police. But this story was interesting because it didn't really focus on that. That's always been his, like, pet issue. But this, the title of the story is How Municipalities in St. Louis County Profit from Poverty.
Right.
And so it was an expose on not just Ferguson, but a lot of the little municipalities in St. Louis County. And we have a lot of them. There are over 90 of them, which is fairly unique in the United States. But, you know, he kind of documents how that proliferation of little municipalities is a result of latent racism that goes back 50, 60 years in this area, and that now it manifests itself as city governments that impose all manner of fines and penalties on their residents, trying to milk as much revenue as they possibly can out of them. And these people are already poor, most of them, so they can't afford to pay the fines. So they don't show up in court because they think they're going to get put in jail, which is illegal. They can't do that, but these people don't know that. So then suddenly they've got a warrant issued for their arrest. And, you know, it just spirals.
You can almost draw back to the Kirkwood City Council shooting.
And they mention Cookie Thornton in this story as well, because that was one of the things he was so spun up about, was he had gotten caught in this spiral of tickets and fines and summonses and, you know.
Yeah.
So I'm pointing that out as one of the things that the people of Ferguson felt oppressed by, that the city government was guilty. I mean, there's 21,000 residents in Ferguson, but they had over 30,000 bench warrants in Ferguson.
Right.
And it's so obvious that it's just a source of revenue for the city. It's not about justice. It's not about prosecuting criminals.
Right.
It's just about making money. And so that's one of the things that they were upset about and angry about. And, you know, I'm not saying they should have burned a Quick Trip down, but I understand.
One thing that article doesn't even touch then is also the selective enforcement of who gets tickets.
Right. Sure.
And I think that matters a lot in the grand scheme of things as well.
Yeah, because, I mean, the statistic was in there about, you know, traffic stops and how they're overwhelmingly minorities, even though, you know, and the arrests as a result of a traffic stop are overwhelmingly minorities, even though the people who are actually found to be carrying contraband or whatever are overwhelmingly white. So, you know, there's obviously a problem there.
Okay.
And I think, you know, I think the media has addressed that in the last month.
So why just now? I mean, I understand sometimes it takes a powder keg.
Yeah.
To really get somebody's attention, but this isn't new.
Right.
I think it's maybe new to people like us, perhaps. But I hate to play the North County card, but I was well aware of this, like, all through high school, growing up.
Come on, tell us what you...
I grew up in NoCo.
Yeah.
Come on, well, give us some experience.
Hazelwood East, represent.
Well, give us some give us some thoughts and experiences.
Well, you see, that's the problem.
You
can't, because as pale as the virgin snow.
Yes, our listeners may not see your race here.
That's right.
They don't see race.
Our listeners are colorblind.
Okay. I mean, but tell us something about it.
I mean,
you were there.
A great example is, well, and I had a friend who drove like a madman and rightfully got pulled over for speeding, but we had a black friend in the car, and he was the only one of us who got, of the passengers, who got asked for his ID. It's subtle things like that.
Right, right.
That you see that, like, that seems weird.
Right, right.
I mean, it took Rodney King for, like, what? That's even the thought of cops being
right,
like, what?
Right.
They're not the...
Right.
The
protect and
protector
serve.
Servers and just
right.
men that
right.
we pay them to do?
Right.
And that's just... I agree. It takes a powder keg.
And the optics were bad. First of all, I need to apologize to the whole community, because I think it might have been the last... Maybe the last podcast where I was talking about O.J. Simpson. and I got nostalgic. Was that here? I don't know who I'm talking to. At some point, I got
the whole community. For the trial or
the,
like
no, the whole nation
NFL rushing record.
No. And his fantastic commercials for Hertz or whatever it was. No, it was. I was thinking, at least in my mind, I don't know if I uttered it aloud to other humans. It gets all confused up there. That I was feeling nostalgic for the O.J. Simpson trial and how it kind of brought the country together. And it was like, this is a lot more tragic because it's, you know, I mean, the other one had death, but this one, you know, the other one had celebrity too. You had Judge Ito and Cato Kalin and, you know, all that sort of thing.
Who has an institute now, apparently.
Yeah, ah! Yeah, I did think. And yeah. So, I was thinking about how, you know, because I remember I was at like a friend's house and the Bronco through the streets was going on. And everybody had the TV on. We were watching it all enthralled. Everybody's watched the Bronco on the streets, you know. I was like, what don't we need? You know, in the Facebook, Twitter generation, like, you don't really have a whole lot that brings you together except for like Jerry's show Utopia. You know, and like this was like, the spectacle of the whole thing, to watch the whole thing, the iconic photo by I Flood Panties is his Twitter handle, with the red hot riplets and the American flag and throwing, I mean, that is fantastic. And the stars that might come out, like Antonio French star is rising, and the Missouri, the trooper guy, the Ron Jefferson, I think, is that right?
Johnson.
Ron Johnson.
Johnson.
Yeah, like, I mean, his star is, like, super on the rise. Like, people are calling for him to run for president. Like, let's get that guy in there, you know?
I think you might be overstating that a little bit.
A little bit.
Yeah, the people who think he was flashing gang signs aren't going to vote for him.
Oh, I didn't see that. But it's like we have these personalities that are starting to rise, you know, through the – it's very much like a little bit of the OJ thing where you got these little shining lights. And we haven't even gotten any kind of, like, a trial or anything. What's going to happen when the trial and Marsha Clark shows up? She changes her haircut.
The day he showed up in Ferguson, I guess somebody took a picture of him and one of his fraternity brothers, and they were making some kind of symbol with their hands a fraternity sign.
Oh, right.
And that picture, you know, took off on the internet, right. And everybody said, oh, he's a gang member, you know. It's like, okay, do your homework, people.
The Missouri Highway Patrol.
So you asked the question, why did this start now? It's because I thought that, Jeremy. It was all my fault. I brought it into being by wishing chaos and tragedy.
So
I have those powers.
Something AJ just said reminded me of another story that was in the reading room, and I'll put this in the missing links section. The title is Different Rules Apply, and it's a blog post by a guy who's talking about an incident that occurred when he was younger.
Yeah.
And it wasn't until he was an older man that he looked back on it and realized the significance of it. The fact that there was a confrontation between him and a minority who he assumed at the time was a homeless person. And, you know, there was an altercation. The cops showed up, and they arrest the minority homeless guy because they assume he was the one at fault, when in actuality it was the author, who was a white man, who had actually started things.
Right.
And, you know, while they're there, they're like trying to put words in his mouth and say, well, he hit you first, right?
Right.
You know, yep. And he thought it was weird at the time, but looking back on it, he realizes that that probably goes on a lot, and that, you know, it's white privilege,
especially
when the cops that show up are white.
Right.
I gotta tell you, I didn't like that article very much.
Really?
It felt a little self-loathing to me. The way it was written, it was a little whiny.
Well, maybe a little bit, but
I'm not saying. I mean, he may have been making a good point. And
I think it identifies a real problem.
I think it does, but I think part of it was lost by the way he wrote that.
Yeah, and maybe.
I think that was just, when I was reading it, I was just like, oh, okay.
You're like, I couldn't help but think of that movie, White Man's Burden.
I've never seen that.
It's worth watching.
Right.
It's, Sidney Poitier was in it, and John Travolta.
John Travolta?
Yeah.
Did he dance in it?
No, he did not dance.
The one
murdering a pig with a sledgehammer.
Have you ever seen it, White Man's Burden?
I have not.
Oh, I have some other absurd thoughts. one thing that goes... I'm not big on the social media, but I do get on Twitter and the Facebook machine from time to time. And like, for this for this instance, how much better Twitter was than Facebook. I think they said there was like twice as many ice bucket challenges on Facebook than there were Ferguson posts. And like, wow. Like, and so I'm like, I'm of a certain age. I've matured. Right.
You're old.
You know? So I'm like, how do I follow this thing? And then I realized like the post, like I kind of hate the Post-Dispatch overall now. Like maybe I remember my mom worked there and I remember like when it was the Pulitzer Prize, it was Pulitzer's thing,
right.
You know? It was
right.
Like a real thing. And now it's like just a gob of AP articles and some Cardinal stories.
Right.
You know, it's just crap, you know? And so I'm like, how do I follow this story? It's happening right in my community. Where do I go? So I go to the Post-Dispatch website, and it's just gob of MLB video ads and, like, a little Botox ad and, like, some crap. I was like, what is this? So I was all mad about
it. So much for the Post-Dispatch sponsorship
That's it. You know, but then I'm following on Twitter, and I start following these various people, and it was the Post-Dispatch journalists that were sending out the best tweets, the best pictures, the best updates. So it's like the journalists were good, but the vehicle sucked.
Yeah.
You know?
Right.
So it's like before it was like the good journalists and then the good vehicle, and we all know the vehicle is kind of like gone to crap as far as like the subscription paper kind of thing. But it was heartening to see like, oh, these people, there were professionals. They had the cameras in the right spots. They knew what they were doing. They were talking to the right people. They weren't tweeting just whatever they saw, you know, at random times.
You know what I'm anxious to see is the documentaries that come out of this.
Right.
I read there were one or two documentaries being filmed like immediately after things, you know, all hell broke loose. No, it won't be Michael Moore.
No, it'll have legitimacy.
It's gonna have Ken Burns, and it's just gonna be still photos.
Pan and scan,
right.
And still photos.
Right, right. But wait, we had
with
video
dramatic music in the background.
But yeah, I am interested to see how this all turns out. But I was a big fan of Twitter. I think the Twitter has done real well.
So what did you? Because I really didn't follow it because I was pretty sure there was going to be a lot of misinformation.
Oh, right.
And it was going to be put out in a way that would try to tell a certain side of the story.
Right.
And you want to be corrupted.
Right. And, yeah, and you really have to choose who you follow. There was some article, which, of course, I never put in the reading room, that was like, and I think it might have been from the UK. It was like how Ferguson reveals a Twitter loop. And it was just all about, you know, what were their Molotov cocktails? You know, some issue, and
right.
Depending on whatever side you followed and who you were looking at, it was like, no, they would never do that. You know, and then you would follow, you know, just
echo chamber on the internet.
Which
it is a funny modern construct to think that people at an active protest are actually looking down at their
phones. Right, right, yeah. Right. I thought this was
live
like,
tweeting a protest.
Right, yeah. I would see that. It was like, so how did they set it? Like, take
I mean,
a picture
I'm not
of the
for
fire
texting
and, then,
and driving,
right.
But protesting and driving. Or texting.
Right, I thought of the same thing.
That was an odd thing to me. So you had the police officer who was suspended for threatening to kill some of the protesters.
They had that one on video.
Which is fine, but look at some of the pictures. There's a police officer in his riot gear and the shotgun that may have, you know, the rubber bullets or whatever they're using, beanbag bullets. Whether it was loaded with that or, you know, you don't know. But so he's just standing there like this, and there's a whole crowd around him, and everybody has a cell phone with the video going,
right,
just shining
right on
him. And, you know, he's kind of moving around like this and, you know, side to side and trying to keep an eye on the situation. And they're just following him with, and it's at night when the protest is going on, so there's this bright cell phone light in his face.
Right. Yeah, the revolution will be televised.
To impact how somebody reacts to a situation.
True.
Right. You can hold them to a standard to say, well, you gotta put that aside.
Right.
Well, where's the threshold when that becomes a threat to him that he needs to respond to?
Right, right, right.
So what made me think of that was you were talking about the texting while...
Yeah,
you know,
while protesting.
But it was, theoretically, nothing was happening with him. He was standing there keeping an eye on the situation, but since he was dressed in riot gear, they had cell phones on him, cell phone cameras
on
him.
Eight cell phone cameras,
and
one guy taunting him and like, come on, make something happen.
Because you do see a couple people, you know, pointing at him.
I'm sure there was plenty of that going on.
Are you surprised that there was no deaths from any of the protests?
But there were people beat up and people shot.
Right.
But they didn't talk about that.
Right.
Oh, no,
that was not...
Right.
because that wasn't part of the narrative that they were putting out.
Okay, we're going to take a quick break. And when we come back, we may pick this discussion up, or we may move on to something else. So stay with us. We are back, and we're going to continue our discussion of Ferguson. Rob has a few more things to say.
I just got some random things to say.
You go.
So one thing I'm probably obsessed with. Let's go with obsessed with.
Sure.
Fascinated with is the audio that came out of the gunshots with the guy.
That's so bogus to me.
You think it's bogus?
I think it's bogus.
I don't think it's bogus, but I think it's like. I'm a little. I enjoy a little surrealist fiction, a little David Lynch, a little Stanley Kubrick. Who else did I even mention in this? Or like Salvador Dali? Like that whole thing. That whole thing.
Were melting. Sorry.
Right, clocks were melting. So I'm also just let my mind ramble a little bit. I'm also the best novel ever written, Infinite Jest by David Foster Wallace, was about a movie.
Rest in peace.
Was so entertaining that it killed all the watchers. Of the movie, and then when you find out what the movie's about, it's some kind of absurd thing of like this wobbly eye that's kind of like a baby's eye, and the whole movie was just a mother looking down and saying, "I'm sorry, I killed you for you being born in the next life," or something. Like that was the entertainment, was like some kind of meaning about your existence or something. And this made me think of that in some way. It's like he's like, "You are so pretty." I mean, he was talking to, you know, some girl, right?
Right.
But it's almost like he's talking to humanity. "You are so pretty. I was checking out some of your videos." While he's saying that, there's violent death
going on in the background.
In the background. It's like
it's 12:01 on a Saturday. Who's doing that?
Yeah.
Don't destroy it for me.
I disagree.
It's high noon.
There was the video of that North St. Louis the police shooting that happened soon thereafter. Why was someone taking a video of that?
Randomly
in an afternoon. So it happens.
Go back to my surrealist fictionalized thing. And don't ruin it by saying it might have been fake.
That's why.
I mean what. And of course, I think they blacked out the guy's face, so it's just like a icon or something. If you go and find it, right? So you all you have is audio, and you have somebody saying, "You are so pretty. I've been checking out your videos," and like right in the background, like this is a beautiful thought that the guy's making. And right in the background,
so he's totally Skyping with a stripper that he met.
He is. That's the reality of it. But isn't it amazing that? Like those words, like beautiful words being spoken. It's like the rose growing out of the crushed sidewalk. It's just the most beautiful thing next to the most horrific
so
humanity.
You're gonna make me put
all
the drifters in the background, right?
You should.
Spanish rose.
This about me, but I just wiped out on my bicycle, and I was off the road. But as soon as I got back on my bike, a guy near Forest Park pulls up next to me. He's like, "Hey, can you tell me where the tennis courts are?" Because of course,
right.
When I'm bleeding and hurting,
right.
A man would just happen upon me and say, "Hey, I need to go play tennis. Can you?"
Is that not the Stanley Kubrick and the David Lynch, the banal, regular daily life amidst like horror and violence? That's what those guys did, right? And that like to me, that video was just. that in a, you know, in reality. I don't know.
That's why I thought it was a fake. It seemed very artificial.
So I read somewhere that Microsoft had verified that it was recorded at the same time as the shooting.
All right.
And I was wrong. But it also, and then you start thinking, I mean, you want to hear about it because you want to hear about the shots, you know, and you're hearing this guy's, like, kind of moves, you know, it's like, and even if it's not moves, you're hearing his daily life, like, can you tell me where the tennis court's bleeding guy, you know, like, no, it hurts.
He's macking on some chick and somebody's dying in the background.
So the, go ahead, finish.
Well, I was just going to say, the interesting thing to me was the pause in the shots.
Yes.
Right? There's like 5 or 6 shots, and then there's about a 2-second pause, and then there's 5 or 6more.
And people, I heard somebody say, well, they thought the 5 shots were the shots in the car, but I don't think that's the shots in the car, right? The shot in the car, I thought, was just the one shot.
I mean, it's said,
It's
been verified how many or what?
I mean, it's hard to say. Like, he could have been firing the first 5 or 6 at his target, and only the first or the last one hit. Right. You know, and so then he stopped to see if that was going to make him stop charging, and it didn't. So then he resumed firing.
Right. But it couldn't have been. I mean, supposedly. I mean, let's just get the hearsay all going. You know, there was the struggle in the car, and I think they confirmed the one. You know, at least one shot in the car. But there wouldn't have been enough time in that pause for him to get out. You know, and do this whole thing. So that must have been, the shot must have been before that. You know, so I think he popped 5 while the guy was running away.
Wow.
Well, that's speculation.
Who knows?
How can you say 5 while he's running away? Because the autopsy showed that they were all entry wounds from the
Interesting.
Yeah, so it would have been 5, like all 5 missed, and then he comes back and all 6 hit.
We were talking to somebody here before we started the show and before Rob got here. And this guy claimed to have some inside scoop about that they're going to announce that they found Michael Brown's DNA on the gun, on the police officer's gun.
Right. Is that really scoop or, well?
Well, I haven't heard it reported anywhere.
I guess it would confirm what the common narrative is.
Yeah,
it would say, well, the argument would be, well, they framed him.
Right,
that
goes back to the first, you know, topic of the day.
So you heard it here first, folks.
That's right.
Michael Brown's DNA found on Officer Wilson's gun.
I accept it as fact, the common narrative that...
I'm not going to bother to verify that at all.
That the common narrative that there was a struggle in the car with the gun, even like the discredited Dorian Johnson witness... I think mentioned the struggle in the car.
Yeah.
Okay, so I don't think that was really... I mean, it's good to get the DNA confirmation of that, but...
If you believe... Two things I have to say. One, back to the recording, the guy...
No, I love
it. Who hears those gunshots and keeps...
Would
you be like, whoa, hey, hang on, baby, I'll be right back.
He lives in NoCo.
Right, and what does that mean? Right, the video is great. That's 9 seconds of wonder.
All right,
I mean, so what does that mean? That must mean that this guy, when he's trying to get it on... And there's gunshots. That's just what happens. That's like birds singing to him. Right.
Fireworks.
Right.
He's doing work, man. He ain't got time to stop for somebody shooting.
Ain't nobody got time for that.
So that woman was happy to be live.
That's right.
Second comment about the common narrative that you just talked about. You said you agree that, or you buy into the struggle in the car. What police officer is going to pull a suspect into his car through the window?
No, I don't.
This is a dangerous road.
Why?
Why? Dangerous road?
Well, I'm saying, like, nobody knows. It was weird. It's all weird.
Right. So, I wouldn't claim that he was. I wouldn't.
But that's.
I'm just saying there was a struggle in the car, but I'm not saying that he got that the cop pulled him in here.
And I think it's important to point out that it wasn't a car; it was an SUV.
Right. Right.
Okay.
It was like he was a little bit higher than a car.
All right.
I'm just putting that out there because when
so
I first heard it...
let me rephrase my comment. What police officer pulls a suspect
through his
window? That was the comment.
I agree.
From the stories that were being told, I saw him pulling him into the car.
Right,
yeah, that's crazy.
That doesn't make sense.
Nobody in their right mind does that.
And as far as the common narrative, I just mentioned the struggle in the car. I wasn't saying he was like, hey, get in here and, you know...
Okay.
That would just be kind of... It doesn't make any sense, you know.
No, it's
Very strange. Like that I think is the point of contention. And I think if you listen to both sides, something weird happened, and then there was the gunfire exchange.
Right.
Yeah.
And that's what nobody knows.
That's a good summation.
Something weird happened.
Nailed it.
They were
gunfire.
They were jaywalking. Something weird happened.
Death.
And then he died.
That we can confirm.
And it's all very sad. And we're not good of a people as.
I don't know if you have more.
I got millions
here,
but
what happens if there's an acquittal?
And that's the safe money on that.
Why do you say that?
And this was earlier. He very well could have met the legal definition of feeling threatened or something to that effect, which I don't think is a tough bar to clear to a jury. Being said, if he met the legal definition, nothing can happen to him.
We talked about that a couple episodes ago, right?
But
now you have these two construction workers from Jefferson County who happen to be in the area and witnesses, and their testimony seems to be backing up the other witness testimony, which would put the officer at fault.
It's just a terrible situation.
So why do you think it's taking so long?
Why you're saying, well, that seems like it's going to go that way?
Because every history of most of these things ever.
Like the Rodney King thing, whatever it is.
These guys in New York, we'll see about that one. But it just, there seems to be a lot of legal favor to those in law enforcement.
Right, right. You're not saying from the facts, you're saying from history and the way these things get decided.
Yes.
Okay, back to my question. What happens if there's an acquittal?
Well, I mean, George Zimmerman got off and really nothing happened.
I think if there's a trial, I think the nation gets involved. Depending on how you feel about, you know, your own personal oppression by police or your connection to police officers, you know, that'll get you kind of fired up about this. But if there's a trial, I think the whole nation gets involved. I think.
So
but what if it doesn't even go to trial?
Are we talking like post Rodney King verdict riots, or
I'd be surprised by that, but
I was surprised it didn't happen with George Zimmerman. Yeah, so. True. I was surprised it didn't happen with George Zimmerman when they announced that verdict. I was fully expecting riots, but I mean, I think this is certainly a bigger story. More polarizing than Trayvon Martin was.
This is more institutionalized. This
This is every bit as bad as, you know, the video. I mean, considering Rodney King happened pre-internet, you know, the video of him getting beat on the side of the road, everybody saw that.
Right, and it's hard for, you know, even police defenders, or if you want to call it a racial thing, for white America to be like, yeah, let's go beat that guy, you know? But I think there might be a feeling like, hey, you know, if there's a trial and essentially the purpose of the trial is to try to prove that, hey, this guy tried to get the guy off the road, saw he had the Swisher Sweets, which I used to smoke in high school, and they're never a good idea to smoke
always a good idea. What are you talking about? Secondly, did you steal them?
I did buy them.
Which, let's talk about that in a second.
Oh, we also had Backwoods, which was also the other gas station cigar we would get. Anyway, yeah. So, yeah, right. So they would, you know, he maybe harasses them to get off the street, sees the Swisher Sweets.
Wait.
That was not confirmed.
No, whether confirmed or not, harass them to get off the street? Let's not word it that way,
Let's not. I'll grant you that.
That's one of the things that I wanted to bring up, actually, because I'm not a police officer, but there's a large contingent of teenagers in my neighborhood. And they walk down the middle of the street, and I got to tell you, it pisses me off.
Right.
Absolutely. I'm trying to get home, like, hey.
No question
about
it.
When I was that age, any age.
Right.
I did not walk down the middle of the street. The cars had the right of way, and I got out of the way.
Right.
And nobody knows exactly what words were used.
Right.
If that was communicated. But, you know, the initial story was that he told them to get the F onto the sidewalk.
Okay.
Right. But that was the Dorian John.
You don't attack somebody then.
Well, okay. I'm not saying that, but I would say that does rise to the level of harassment. What? Because you can politely ask somebody to get out of the street and walk on the sidewalk.
If you look at that street on Google Maps, if they were walking on the sidewalk, they'd be walking single file, like behind each other. Yeah. That doesn't bother me. It's a road. It's a public place.
Right, right.
It's a road, right. It's a road.
Well, I bicycle for driving. The road is for everyone.
Not pedestrians.
Not if there's a sidewalk.
Right. Even if you have to walk single file. So the point is...
But and that's why, they released the strong arm robbery video, right? So obviously the victim is amped up and ready to, you know, he's amped up, right? I mean he steals the stuff
in theory,
and then you know confronts the store owner, right? So I mean his
wait, and this he was just a good kid.
Depending on who you see. Now and this comes down to the video. Like the video is key for the robbery. But I switch it the other way, and I'm kind of pissy, and I finally have come to this sort of revelation.
Jerry, write that down. Rob's pissy.
Rob's pissy.
This is unusual.
Right. Of how crappy it was. I didn't realize it at the time because I was so hungry for information that they're like, we're going to release the cop's name and this strong arm robbery video. Like, that's just kind of a...
It's kind of a dick move.
It's a dick move.
I don't buy into that it's a dick move. Here's what I was hearing on the little bit that I followed it. And I say little bit, I mean watching several hours every night.
Yeah, right.
No, I wasn't on Twitter. So whatever. But there was a contingent of protesters begging for information. They were...
Right.
Beating their fists. We want information. Whatever evidence you have.
Sure.
And to me, that
good
was
good for
them. All right, you want evidence? Here's the evidence. Here's the officer's name. And oh, here's this little piece of evidence that you might not like so much.
Right, but it was...
But it's evidence, so here it is.
But that's a dick move.
Why is that a dick move, Rob? It's evidence. They were asking for evidence.
Well, there's a lot of evidence to release.
If you read between the lines there, it was... Okay, fine. We're going to give you the cop's name, but at the same time, we're going to tell you that Michael Brown wasn't the angel that everybody's
right,
saying
right.
He was.
Why is that wrong?
I'm not saying it is.
You are saying it. What you just said
is a timing.
Dick move.
The timing of
it's
it.
Not a, it's was, not. It's not a healthy release of information.
When is it okay?
Well, I don't know.
At the very least, I see that as inflammatory. So, they're trying to cool a protest.
So the, right.
It was trying to cool a protest.
How about this? It was intentional. It was intentional to bring those two together.
The shooting that occurred. What, the day after in the city?
Yes.
You know, with the guy who was mentally unstable?
Right. Right.
Though the city cops did it the right way. They held a press conference within like an hour of the shooting on the scene and basically gave all the information they had at that point.
Okay, do you think they would have done that if Ferguson hadn't happened?
I don't know, but...
I'm going to guess no, because there are shootings...
But they set the precedent that, you know... That is how you prevent your city from blowing up.
Right.
And
there have been plenty of shootings where they haven't done a press conference.
Right. Right.
On scene within a couple
but
hours.
But maybe that's why you protest. We were asking before, like, well, why bother?
But,
you know, it's because you start to demand that accountability of people.
But that's not... That's another issue I have is that we're demanding this, so you need to give it to... What other crimes do they prevent? Okay, just happened an hour or two ago. Here's all of our evidence.
Right.
Do that?
Right.
Well, no, but... Like one guy tweeted, and I retweeted it. He said, how long does it take to fabricate evidence? 5 days, evidently.
Yeah, I saw that.
You know, I mean, it's a joke, but there's a serious point behind it that... If the Ferguson Police Department was trying to cover something up, waiting that long to release anything only makes them look bad.
Okay.
Right.
And in the eyes of the protesters who had already sided with Michael Brown, who had already decided he was unarmed and that he had his hands raised when he was shot,
right.
Every minute that went by without any kind of information coming out of the police department... Just made them look,
right.
You know, more guilty.
I'm actually coming down. I think it was just not a dick move, but it was really dumb. They could have swept that under the rug, and it wouldn't have mattered. I mean, if they had the evidence for that particular crime.
With the robbery?
Yeah. Wouldn't have mattered to me, because if they're trying to calm a protest, why release it?
Well, the only reason it would have mattered, and they pointed this out at the same time, that Officer Wilson didn't know about the robbery.
Right.
Right.
If they hadn't pointed that out, then releasing the robbery video would have, at that point, completely exonerated Wilson, because he could have been aware that Michael Brown fit the description of somebody who had just committed a felony moments before.
I have a question. Right. Is that actually a felony? I mean, it's a $40
retail
thing. I guess maybe if you, like, it's a strong arm, then it maybe crosses the line.
He assaulted him.
Theft. Okay.
Yeah. That's what makes it a felony.
Okay.
Right.
I don't think he was a first-time offender either, so does that add on to it?
Do we know that?
Yes.
Like, he had the record?
I don't think we know his record.
They've talked about it.
Really?
I'm not aware of
that. That was part of the whole, they're assessing his character now.
Well, I heard rumors at first that he had a conviction as a juvenile.
Right.
But then they unsealed those records, or at least whoever's in charge of those records said no, he had never been convicted as a juvenile.
Okay.
But there's a lot of confusion about that. And then the Post-Dispatch filed to get the juvenile records released.
Under the Sunshine Law.
Yeah. And it got denied.
But, yeah, whoever the department is in charge of juvenile justice came out and said, look, we're telling you there's nothing in his record. We're not going to unseal his records.
Which is a lot like the Obama birth certificate.
It's a lot like that.
Yeah. To Jeremy's point, the way I understood that, the juvenile record people said, no, he wasn't convicted of any felonies.
Right.
So that leaves the door open for maybe there was a petty theft, and just because Officer Wilson...
I hate to make light of it, but every time I think of that, I always think of the Jeff Foxworthy, Officer Wilson, you said you weren't going to come back here again. Like to report a crime. Larry puked in the aquarium. Anyway, sorry. A little sidebar there. Maybe the officer didn't know that he had just committed a crime.
No.
But Mike Brown knew.
Right.
And he didn't know that the officer didn't know.
Right.
So he thinks, crap, here are the cops. They're coming to get me for this robbery I just committed.
Right.
So,
right. And obviously he's amped up, right? In the video, he's amped up. He's like, you know.
Well, yeah.
He's not chilling, right? He's, you know.
And this was something you brought up when we talked about the Trayvon Martin thing, like the character assassination.
Right.
And your contention was that it's irrelevant. Well, I think it is relevant, especially when one side is trying to peddle a story of he's just a teddy bear. He's a teddy bear.
Right. Yeah, because you have the word, and the way those two sides play together. Yeah, you have the teddy bear, and then you have he's a demon. You know, well, the real question is, does this cop have the right to decide on his own to execute this guy?
I'm not.
Or was he defending him? That's the real question.
All these things don't necessarily say, go ahead and shoot that guy.
Right. But it factors in, right?
There, yes.
Right.
It's all factors. And posting pictures of him when he's 13 or 14 doesn't show the real guy.
Right.
Second, I just forgot what I was going to say.
I bet it was great, though.
Would have sealed this case. Oh, my God.
Well, and that was...
Oh, I know. Sorry, let me finish. And then,
go ahead.
In any trial, do they not have character witnesses?
Sure.
Okay, so how is it... It's okay in a trial, but you can't... In the trial of public opinion that's going on right now, you can't have it?
Well, you can make the argument that they're tainting any possible jurors that would serve on that trial later.
So things that are for him being the big teddy bear doesn't taint jurors, but things that show a questionable past taint jurors? You can't play both sides, and that's my biggest thing.
I agree with you.
No, you're right, and the photograph thing was echoes of Trayvon Martin, right? Because the first photos released of him were like 5 years out of date.
It's like, here's his baby picture. Look how sweet he is. Yeah, that's not the guy who walked to 7-Eleven and got the...
Okay, so we're going to move on now to our esteemed president, commander-in-chief, and the decisions he has made in recent days regarding ISIS or ISIL. I'm still confused as to...
I prefer ISIL because of Rob's friend Levant that he had back in high school.
I have to wonder, though, if that isn't if that isn't the DOD actively trying to make the organization look bad. Like they're, you know, they don't want
to juniors in high school.
They don't want to refer to them by the name that they want to be referred to.
I heard on NPR because I'm the liberal. But yeah, this is a real thing. Like they named themselves the Islamic State. Well, that's quite a name to give yourself. That you're just gonna, you know, take the mantle of the entire
right.
Islam.
So
that, and so now when you call them that, you know, you're kind of granting them their own status that they want.
So their name in Arabic uses al-Sham,
right,
to refer to a region, and that region can be either what we traditionally call the Levant, which is everything from, you know, Lebanon all the way down to the Saudi Peninsula, basically.
Yeah.
Or it could just refer to Syria. It can refer to certain areas in Syria. So, I mean, that word isn't terribly descriptive, even in Arabic. So when you translate it into English, it could mean a lot of things.
Yeah.
But anyway, so, yeah, I... I don't know why, but I keep thinking of that old television ad, Come Back to Jamaica. Remember that song? Only somehow I want to, you know, sing Come Back to Iraq or Come Back to Baghdad or, you know. That's
Come Back
what,
to Fallujah.
Yeah,
Come
Back to Fallujah. So, yeah, we're going back to Iraq, baby.
Well, to me, the timing of it is strange, and the tone shift is very strange because less than a month ago, a couple of weeks ago, it was these are just some clowns out in the desert,
yeah,
and not a problem,
right?
All of a sudden, it's they will not win. Anybody who threatens us, we will take them down,
right?
Whatever his speech, I can't remember the exact words, but
well, and don't forget too that. A year ago, we were talking about how Bashar al-Assad had just crossed the red line, right?
Yes.
By using chemical weapons. Well, now we're essentially aligning ourselves with him because he's also opposed to ISIS.
Right. So the guy we wanted to bomb a year ago, we were actively looking to take him out.
The enemy of my enemy is my friend.
Yeah.
We played this game before,
and,
right?
Interestingly enough, part of this whole thing, now we're going to arm Syrian rebels. Is
Moderates.
Yeah.
The moderate
medium
rebels.
Spicy.
They just...
medium spicy.
So is this a, hey, let's hedge our best.
Original
so
recipe, I, so not once, extra crispy.
ISIS is toast, then they can turn the RPGs onto Assad, and then...
I think... The pivot that happened in the most deft of political or politician moves is our opinions changed. Like, the polls changed.
Yeah.
Right.
People actually were like, what?
Yeah.
And the two journalists getting beheaded and then plastering it on TV,
yeah,
like, oh, this is legit.
Right.
Okay, we should be scared. We're scared now. I'm frightened.
Despite the analysis that says that first video might have been faked.
Whoa.
Same thing with Nick Berg, the Nick Berg beheading back.
Oh, I hadn't read that.
Not that it was faked, but that he was already dead when the beheading happened. But then there was the truck driver, the old guy, the truck driver after that, and that was like, you know, they're like, okay, yeah, that one was real. You know. But get your Reynolds wrap ready to make a tinfoil hat. Maybe, does anybody think the two guys could have been rescued, and it was, hey, we need to get back over there, so let's...
Oh, I like it!
Wag the dog!
I like it!
I like it!
Drop the microphone.
Just
please note, Jeremy has just left the booth.
That's right. Yeah. I haven't heard that before, but my mind is blown. Yeah.
It is.
That would be
good.
Right. Well... speaking as the anarchist, I'll say I'm not surprised.
Right, right. Even though you were surprised.
Oh, I like how he left and it's suspense.
He did left. He just dropped that bomb, and then he's going to drop a bomb in the bathroom.
Nice.
We'll get that in production.
So, yeah, I mean, those of us that grew up, my generation and probably a little after... You know, that's never the first thing that leaps to mind, is that the government is up to some nefarious, you know, despite Watergate and despite, right. you know, the loss of innocence and all that, that's still not the first thing that comes to mind. When
I don't think that. Younger generation.
And I grew up on the internet.
Cardinals won, by the way, 5-1.
That's all that matters.
Okay, Cardinals predictions.
That's
right.
Go Cards.
Game predictions. Cardinals predictions.
Yeah, they're going to make it to the postseason and lose to the Dodgers.
Do they win the division?
That's my prediction. No.
Yes. Nope. I think they do.
Well, you said lose to the Dodgers. Well, I guess you didn't say when. If they win the division, they probably don't face the Dodgers, right? They probably face.
There's that one game gimmick playoff nowadays, isn't there?
But that's like, only if you. That's only for the wild card, right?
Yes.
So if you win the division, you'll probably. Play.
No, I think they'll get the division. They've got a. As long as they play 500 ball or something.
Just muddle through.
They don't have to mow, eh?
But they're somehow terrible at terrible teams. It's like.
You know,
it's like.
There was a few years ago when I think the statistic was they had a winning record against winning teams and a losing record against losing teams.
Yep.
And.
I always remember San Diego for some reason. They go like, I was like, sweet, weekend series at San Diego with the Padres. We got this, you know. And then get swept and like, come on.
Yeah.
I don't know what it is.
On the beach all day.
Yeah, just chilling, having a margarita, I don't know.
All right, so do we have more to say about Iraq? I mean,
it's all taking shape now.
Well, I think it is very optimistic of the Obama administration to think that we can send a couple hundred, consultants, basically, over there to try to retrain the Iraqi army to take over.
Right.
I mean, that is a recipe for failure. I also think that, you know, the whole... I think that we are sadly mistaken if we think we're going to be able to eradicate ISIS without ground troops. And so far, only some of the coalition countries have agreed to provide ground troops. We're not going to send any of ours, at least not in any significant numbers. So, I mean, to think that this could be just a bombing campaign like we did in Libya is very naive, in
my
opinion.
What about a sustained bombing campaign?
Well,
in that case.
Uh-oh.
I mean, I when I heard it, I was just like, it's all going to be CIA dudes with CIA dudes and drones.
So, what are you going to do? You're going to target all the oil fields that that ISIS currently controls so that they can stop smuggling oil, and you're going to cut off basically all of their financing. I get that. But they still have tens of thousands of troops on the ground by any reasonable estimation. You're not going to eradicate those folks just by bombing them, because they're not all hanging out in one place.
I caught John Boehner's press conference the other day, and I'm no fan of Boehner. I'm not. He made his wording was interesting. I didn't hear the question from a reporter, but his answer was, well, we're not going to defeat this without somebody's boots on the ground.
Right, I heard that.
So,
somebody. Not us, but
not
somebody.
Because then somebody would lose an election here, but somebody needs to go over there.
Yeah.
Do you ever think the borders will actually ever be redrawn from the arbitrary post-World War I?
Yeah.
I mean, it could be.
Which is the whole ISIL point, right? I mean, you got this...
Being redrawn in the Ukraine.
Well, somebody said that, you know, if ISIS isn't respecting the border between Syria and Iraq, why should we? You know, if it's all one country now.
Does it hurt your faith, if you're Christian? Does it hurt your Christian faith? Sort of making me want to give up a little bit. You know, I don't know. It could be my life stage.
What?
How so?
it saves me if I think this is a cultural thing, like your favorite sports team, your Sunni Shiites, or your it's a it kind of a, you know, go Sunni Crusaders or whatever. Boy, that would be a really bad name. The Sunni Crusaders would be not great.
Yeah, they probably wouldn't go for that.
Yeah, right. Or the Sunni Mujahideen, really good football team, got a good wide receiver. Azza Hakim plays for them. Anyway,
oh my gosh.
You know, wow. But you know, if it's a cultural thing, I get it. But you know, I don't know. I've just been thinking about. I mean, if they really are trying to pull the caliphate and they're really doing their kind of their faith based initiative to wipe out all infidels, including Muslims that aren't
About the end of the world,
right? That you know, including Muslims that are not as devout as themselves, and they were gonna, you know. I don't know. Do you really think it's a faith thing, or is this just another power group that's trying?
It's another power group. Yeah.
Okay.
I don't think so. Right.
So they're using faith to kind of unite their little power group.
Yeah, I have to believe that they're every bit as extremist as, you know, the tinfoil hat crowd in this country.
Right, but not. They're not really driven by faith, but driven by unity to their kind of power cause.
Yeah.
To take control over things. Okay.
In America, the Westboro Baptist Church picks up signs and not guns.
Right. All right. Well, you made me feel better. Thanks, podcast.
Oh, thank goodness you can keep going to church now.
Oh, no. I'll go.
All right. So I would like to move on just briefly and talk about this new show on Fox called Utopia. I've watched the first two episodes. Third episode is on now as we speak. And it is by anyone's measurement, a train wreck. I mean, it is your typical reality show with all of the contrived situations, the stereotypical participants. Like, I mean, it is all of that.
Train wreck in a good way or a bad way?
Well, I think...
I like a good reality TV show train wreck. Right. Yeah. When you watch reality TV, you want to see...
It's a spectacle.
Is it a good spectacle or is it contrived? In the sense that you look at, you know, the one-on-one conflicts that occur on the show, at least the first two episodes that I've seen, you just sit there and shake your head and you're like, oh my God, where did they get these people? But if you dig a little deeper and you look... You know, you kind of read between the lines of what they're trying to do. And by the way, this show is another knockoff of a European show that started New Year's Eve last year. So it's been on for, you know, 9 months now.
Yeah.
And it's about to wrap up because they're only doing it for a year. And this was in the Netherlands where the original show was staged. But this one's in California. If you read between the lines, you can see that they're taking a bunch of people and they're putting them in this compound and they're saying, okay, look, you can't leave. We're going to give you $5,000 in cash that you all have to decide collectively how to spend. And then you have to figure out a way to sustain yourselves for the next 12 months. So that means you've got to plant and grow your own food. They give them two cows and a coop full of chickens, and that's basically all the food they're given. I mean, there's a few foodstuffs provided, but it's certainly not enough for 14 people for a year. It's just enough to, like, keep them alive, you know, for the first month or so. So, I mean, if you look past all of that, which is designed to create conflict and generate ratings... Then the premise of the show is actually kind of interesting and something that dovetails well with what we talk about here on the show, in my opinion. And that is, if you were going to abandon your current system of government and start something new, what would it look like? And how would it play out if you actually tried to implement it? And it's just amazing to me how I've already seen that in the first two episodes, that, you know, there was all this conflict and there was a tribunal that occurred. There's one of the participants, and they call them pioneers. All the people on the show are called pioneers. One of the pioneers is a New York lawyer, All right, and so he leads this tribunal. He's even got a gavel, and I don't know where that came from. I don't know if he brought it with him.
He had it brought it with him.
I don't know if he brought it with him or one of the producers gave it to him or what. But,
does he bang it around?
Yes.
How does the tribunal come about? Is that a thing on the show, or did
No. This spontaneously forms after the first night, because the first night one of the guys gets drunk and kind of, I won't say sexually assaults, but certainly says some inappropriate things and probably touches somebody inappropriately.
Is he from New Jersey?
No, I don't think so.
Okay.
And so the next day, they bring this guy in to the tribunal, and everybody basically, you know, confronts him and says, hey, look, that kind of behavior is unacceptable. Here is your sanction, all right? But some of the people think the tribunal's ridiculous, so they get up and walk out.
Yeah.
So they don't even have a majority in the tribunal.
How did they get all that alcohol?
They did vote.
Yeah. Oh, they provide alcohol.
Oh, of course.
That's plentiful, but you only get two cows. Right. Here's four cases of right. Johnny Walker.
Right. You get two bags of rice, but here's a whole case of wine. Okay, so in the second episode, two guys splinter off into their own little group, right? And they open the safe and they take out their share of the $5,000 and say, we don't like how the group is collectively deciding to spend our money, so we're going to take our share and we're going to go off and spend it our own way. Which I think is very appropriate to the discussions we've had on the show before about, you know, like,
I don't want to pay for that road. Or
exactly.
That.
If the government is spending your tax money in a way you don't agree with, you have a right to withhold your money and say, I'm not going to pay my taxes because I don't agree with the way you're spending them.
Well, if it's not apparent from my comments, I have not watched the show. I saw a clip of it. That was about all I could stomach.
Yeah.
Where do they go to spend this money? How does that manifest?
Okay, so on the first episode, the group has a cell phone, but it's not charged. And they have electricity. They have electricity on the compound, but they have to dig a trench and run wire to the barn where the outlets are before they have electricity in there where they can actually plug the phone in and charge it. So that's like the whole first episode is some of them collaborating on digging this trench so that they can get electricity. And then about half of the group says, I don't feel like working that hard. I'm not going to help you with that. So they all just kind of sit back and watch.
My and liberals.
Did they form a union? Did they have a street crew on that? Sounds like a street crew.
So in the second episode,
no response to us.
In the second episode, they get electricity. You know, they turn the lights on for the first time, and there's a big celebration. But then they plug the phone in, they charge it, so now they can call out and they can order stuff and have it delivered
in. From Amazon or who?
I don't know where.
They have grocery delivery.
Domino's Pizza.
Yeah, so they have food delivered. And then the two splinter guys, you know, the utopian state of freedom, which is what they call themselves, they get the phone and they call and order their own food. But they don't order reasonable food that's going to feed a whole lot of people. They get Oreos and chips
A lot of goods that need refrigeration.
Yeah. Oh, no. It's a little lack of planning.
All right. That would be good.
I'm good.
Have you watched Utopia? No? Maybe you should. We weren't recording earlier, so I gotta ask her again.
Okay.
Yeah, it's on Fox.
Give it a sample.
Yeah, watch one episode, see what you think. Okay. All right. All right.
We'll see.
So what? When? I have so many questions. I guess I should have just watched, but I don't think I would have been able to tolerate the. I really don't think I would have made it through, especially two episodes. But
if it's germane to the podcast, maybe you tune in.
Yeah.
Damn, Germans got nothing to do with it. That's the second time I've used that one on the podcast.
Okay, so I I'm going to confess, I have the app installed on my tablet here.
Goodness.
And there's a live feed, yeah, right. So you can watch. It's like Big Brother in that respect. You can watch it 24
Pretty
hours a day
women
if you
on
want.
That show?
There, huh? Of course, there is. I'm all set.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Of course there are.
There's already been a little bit of that.
Oh. Well, it's utopia after all.
Yeah. That is some people's idea of utopia, right?
Oh, you haven't even mentioned the, like, super religious fellow who I think is just horrified by the spec. Like,
of course, one of the participants is a Baptist pastor.
All right.
And, well, I don't know if he's Baptist, actually.
I think he's Pentecostal.
Even better.
Yeah.
So he's been completely mortified by all the ladies who think clothing is optional.
Yeah.
Not the old swimming hole.
When they had the celebration, when they finally got electricity, how did the celebration go? Even the people who didn't want to work very hard, did they allow them to celebrate?
Oh, yeah, they were all there.
Perfect. See, Jeremy's fascinated now. I want to watch
all
this.
All right. Well,
I would like to hate them more.
Yeah. I don't feel like I've hated them enough.
But
yet.
No one owns the means of production in that argument.
That's right. Yeah, well, it's not letting me bring up the live feed.
You've done a good press release for them.
Yeah, it's certainly worth watching. Watch a couple episodes, see what you think. We'll talk about it next time.
What
on
night
the show.
Is it on?
Friday.
Well,
right now
it's on Sunday, Tuesday, and Friday. Now, I'm sure that's subject to how the ratings are. If it does well, that will probably continue. If not, it'll probably slip back to like one night a week or something. But yeah, so check it out on Sunday. And of course, if any of our listeners have watched it and have an opinion about it, please provide your feedback. We'd love to hear it. So now I want to, because we invited AJ here, based on some of the comments he made about our last episode, now we're going to put him on the spot and make him defend his comments. On our last episode, we were talking about, well, maybe it wasn't the last one, it might have been two episodes ago, we were talking about immigration. And AJ, you said there needs to be a cost-benefit analysis of immigration. Do the benefits of bringing in immigrant children into the country outweigh the costs of keeping them at the border, deporting them? I think the black eye of not welcoming children, albeit not properly documented children, is worse than the cost of seeing the U.S. as a cold, heartless place where only Caucasian immigrants were rubber stamped at Ellis Island, but says no thank you to brown folks.
Disagree.
Represent.
Caucasians
my brother.
Were not rubber stamped at Ellis Island.
Yeah, a little hyperbole there, but
yeah,
it's an internet comment. You gotta let it flow.
I think the Irish were probably as discriminated against as any minority back
then. That's true, and people changing their last names to Johnson so
right.
They appear Swedish.
Nice.
Yeah, so, I mean,
that was the point of the comment.
Yeah.
Is it worth it? And that's a good measure for anything in life.
So
I don't think so.
So as the anarchist, and as I've said many times on the show before, I think any immigration policy is essentially racist at its core. And, you know, I don't believe that preventing people from coming into this country really serves a purpose. I think everybody should be welcome to come in as long as they can, you know, find gainful employment and support themselves and their families. They should be welcome to come here.
But that's not the case.
That is not the case.
Refer to article.
And furthermore,
two-thirds of the way through the reading room.
Go ahead.
Illegal immigrants enrolling in our schools, but they've got gray hair and wrinkles.
Yeah.
And that was a legit, that came from, was it the mayor of, it was a female, she was a mayor of somewhere, I think it was in Massachusetts, and I realized Massachusetts is a long way from the Texas border, but getting a lot of immigrants flown there. So you get these older immigrants, and they're enrolling in, hey, I'm going to go into public school. No matter, it doesn't mind that I'm 40 years old or 50 years old.
Yeah.
That's not okay.
I don't have a problem with it.
I don't want, if I had a child in school, I don't think it's appropriate for them to be, I mean, that is a very different life stage.
Well, okay,
you're not enroll in some
yes.
It's not appropriate for a 50-year-old to be going through, you know, junior high or
okay,
something.
Okay, but that's that's what she's saying here.
Yeah, I agree.
Well, you said you didn't have a problem with it.
Well, I don't have a problem with them coming here and wanting to go to school.
I don't
know,
so how do they go to school?
Well,
a lot of public schools, and I know my alma mater does offer an adult education classes. So there are channels for that.
But they should be in the evening, and they should be separate from, you know, the 12-year-olds. They shouldn't be in the same class.
Points like this that you haven't, like, just a rock hard position. Yes, men should not be going to school with girls. I agree. But there are proper outlets for that, and I don't have a problem with anyone coming to America.
Coming to America, that was a good movie.
It was a good movie.
It was a good movie.
Yes! Nobody should have a problem with it.
No one should have a problem with Eddie Murphy in his prime.
That's right. And Arsenio Hall.
Together.
And Sexual Chocolate.
And James Earl Jones.
Ladies and gentlemen, give it up for the band. Sexual Chocolate.
No problem getting re-educated. All right.
I don't have a problem with that. I mean, as we've discussed on the show before, what I have a problem with is the handouts.
Right.
I mean, the government shouldn't be handing that stuff out. If you eliminate that problem, then the immigration problem evaporates.
Okay. You have a problem with the handouts, so you do have a problem with this because it's a form of handout.
Well, but they're giving the handouts to bona fide U.S. citizens as well.
Okay.
So I don't care who's receiving them. It's the handout I have a problem with, not whether or not you're, quote, documented or, quote, legal. It's the documentation I have a problem with as well. I resent the fact that I have to have a government-issued passport in order to leave and enter my own country.
Well, speaking of government-issued passports, they have now increased the fee to renounce your citizenship by 422%.
Is that in the reading room?
It is in the reading room.
Okay, I will add that to the show notes as well.
It is right here, right on just below the fold, as they say.
Okay. Ah, yes.
Came from Forbes.
So it wasn't Drudge.
So what is it up to? Was it previously like free?
No, it wasn't free. Okay. It was, I mean, I think it's approaching $1,000.
Wow.
Yeah, so I mean, we've talked about renouncing citizenship before on the show, and the fact that it is not a straightforward process by any means, and basically only rich people can afford to do it, or really have an incentive to do it, and you know, like the co-founder of Facebook that now lives in Singapore, he renounced his
Eduardo
Sabrin. His citizenship, right before the IPO, so that he would not have to pay taxes on his share of that.
And they've gone after him for that. And essentially, him doing that caused them to change rules about doing that.
It always comes from the tax code.
So there isn't a huge flood of people leaving the country. It's probably on the order of thousands per year. So it's not like, you know, there's a huge number of people leaving. But I'd be interested to see, are they doing exit surveys on these people and asking them, why are you leaving? What is your reason for, you know, going somewhere else? I would like to see the results of that. Like, what is the reason that there's this steady trickle of people heading for the door?
Enough that they had to increase the cost of it.
Right.
Because they said there's a backlog. They,
yeah.
They can't keep up with the demand.
All right, so let's hit maybe one more of AJ's comments here. I thought what he said about altruism was interesting. We mentioned that briefly, I think, in either the last episode or the one before. There is no such thing as altruism because no such thing as a truly selfless act. There is a benefit in helping others when you accept the premise that there can be good feelings generated from non-financial transactions, even with supply-demand analysis. There's nothing wrong with getting good feelings from the transaction of helping someone else or donating money / time. In fact, we should encourage and incentivize chasing that feeling. I'm in a voluntary community big band, and playing big band music for senior citizens and receiving smiles back makes me feel much better than spending $20 on something that isn't beer or a burrito.
Disagree.
Oh, man.
Burritos.
Tough crowd here.
Well, I agree that generally when you do something for somebody, yeah, there's a good feeling. But there have been times when I genuinely did not want to help somebody, but I did because that was the right thing to do. And, like, they needed help, and that was the right thing to do. Right. And I'm like, you know what, this thing sucks, and I don't want to do this.
Right, I don't want to spend my time, or no, this person got themselves into this trouble.
Yes, and I don't feel good.
In that situation, I would say it's a negative. You're taking away bad, which is in the transactions. Like I know I'm going to feel like a
you're minus
person.
A negative.
No, if you would have not have stopped to help that person, you would have felt even worse.
So, no, I totally disagree with
so
that.
So this is like,
I would have felt great.
Is this like your
wow, that
your
is
karma
intense.
Coin account is
but you don't
negative,
feel like you don't feel like you're like, man, I did a good thing because not only did I do it, I didn't want to do it, and I still did it.
No, I think, you know what, I just made it worse because now they're going to come ask me again sometime. That was stupid of me to do that.
Do you have
giving Rob a pen almost every episode.
Wow, you
no,
are
no, I could just show up. Jeremy's going
to
hook me up.
Him to never bring a pen.
Exactly. That's what I've said.
You need to stand on your own pen.
That's
feet.
Right. That's right.
When
and I don't click
when
it.
When the safety net becomes a hammock.
Yes. Well.
And I will say, as far as your thoughts here, there were. As the resident chair liberal on the show, we are fantastic at patting ourselves on the back for how great we are.
Absolutely,
you know, and that's pretty much the best part about being a liberal. You just get to self. There's a lot of self congratulation,
mutual admiration.
Right,
society.
You're great. You're great. No, look how great I am. I am pretty great. You're right.
I sprained my shoulder.
Right, right,
back.
right.
Your sling?
Look how compassionate I am. I'm almost crying
you
about myself.
With your canvas toes. Right. <It's wonderful. laughs>
Right. So
disgusting.
We do have to be aware.
It's disgusting.
We do have
but
to be aware
that's
of that.
The point. That was the other comment. Like the and oddly enough, coming from a Bill Murray movie, but like that last scene in Scrooge is really great as far as like a feel.
I don't know if I remember it.
Well, he just goes on like how you want to chase that feeling, and I agree. And granted,
liberal
you need
guilt.
You need to be cynical enough so people don't pull one over on you.
Right.
And I truly believe that.
Right.
But there is, and that hence the comment of once you accept that you can feel good by not spending money.
Yeah.
That,
right.
That is an important premise in that whole.
Yo, preach it, brother. You just said commie speak to our
no.
No.
Yes, I'm. The currency is hugs. Look, trading in it.
Look, I'll be the first one.
I'll
be the first one to sign up for charity right. Because I think that you know the quote unquote system that I'm always prescribing doesn't work unless there's charity.
Right, sure.
So I'm the first one to sign up for that.
Right.
What I disagree with, and as I've stated many times on the show before, is that when you do it at gunpoint, it's not charity.
Right.
When government threatens you with violence if you don't give them money, and then they turn around and use that money to do good things, it negates all the good things that they're doing.
You've convinced us.
They have seized that money using violence or the threat of violence. And that, in a nutshell, is what's wrong with any kind of centralized government. Drop the mic.
There you go.
Except you didn't actually leave.
Yeah, well, you're in my way. I can't
right,
get out of
back
the,
up. We
can't get out of the booth.
All right, big ending.
All right, big finish.
Big finish. Hey, we got a big band man. He knows how to do the big ending.
Yeah, we might have to.
Drum fills.
Yeah. All right, everyone hold a note, and then the drummer just
does some stuff for a while. I think we're going to commission your big band to do our theme music.
Hey, that's not nice.
I wrote the theme music.
And now he's trying to supplant it in the third year. It didn't have a good three-year run, but maybe it did. It might be time to.
It might be time to update that. We've begun our fourth year.
Lounge singer. What about a little big band like?
Oh, hey, that might be good.
Worthwhile the last couple minutes here. Anybody have a last? I have one more reading room item.
All right, go for it.
Point out. We don't have to talk about it. I just want to point it out.
All right.
Maybe two. Harry Reid makes an Asian joke in Las Vegas.
Asian
Chamber of Commerce. What? Finally, I knew it was going to happen. I just couldn't wait for Harry Reid's star to fall. What a lame-o. Second.
Yeah.
He's kind of lame.
He's pretty lame.
Even the liberals are agreeing.
Isn't that what you want in a politician? Like, that guy is about as charming as toast.
This might be my favorite headline of the year. I don't know. Robots could murder us out of kindness unless they are taught the value of human life. Because the robots would determine that the human race, the human experiment, is a failing.
Yes, an abject failure.
And the best.
We are a virus. As Agent Smith.
Easy there, Skynet.
That came out of a young female professor out of Scotland or England or something, I believe. And anyway, pretty good article.
So. All right, so the moral of that story and the warning to our listeners is beware of the rise of the machines.
Right. And hope they start with the liberals and then realize, oh, now it's not so bad.
That's
then
right.
We've improved it.
By 10%. Tops.
That's right.
All right, so I want to thank GC Food and Brewery for hosting us once again. I want to thank AJ, our special guest, for joining us and offering his perspective on things.
All of his incorrect opinions.
He's not wrong.
And most of all, I want to thank our listeners and keep giving us that feedback. And, you know, if you want to be on the show, by all means, send us a note. And who knows, maybe next episode we'll invite you to be on the hot seat with us. So thanks for listening, and we'll see you next time.
Good night.
Bye now.
Bye.